I'd like to call to order the Oro Valley Town Council regular session, May 19th, 2021, online Zoom meeting to order. Mr. Standish, roll call, please.
Vice President.
Here.
Councilmember Bowen. Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Mickelson.
Here.
Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Present. There are 6 of 7 council members present. Thank you, Mr. Standish. There are 22 participants. That includes council, staff, and members of the public. I move to go into executive session with the town manager, assistant town manager, town attorney, legal services director, and the town clerk.
I'll second that, Mr. Mayor.
Seconded by Councilmember Solomon. Any discussion? Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes, I just like the town manager and maybe town attorney to just provide a little bit of a basic summary as to the purpose of this executive session for the public as to whatever is able to be made public.
Sure, let me start, Ms. Manager. So the purpose for going into executive session is twofold. One, to discuss potential contract discussions for amenities at the Oro Valley Marketplace Retail Center. The second reason is related to the first, which is for the council to obtain legal advice. And in that regard, the previous conversation with regard to what can potentially be done with amenities in a public-private partnership would be in light of the Sherry's decision. When we get into executive session, I can certainly expand on that. But that will be, to my knowledge, the entire scope of the session.
Thank you. That's enough for me.
Okay. Thank you. So if council would please go out of this public session and into the executive session Zoom connection. Thank you.
We need to vote. Yep. Mr. Mayor.
Sorry. Yep, you're right.
Excuse me.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen? Councilmember Green? Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Mickelson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
Yes.
And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. So the vote was 6-0. Councilmember Bowen, your microphone was off. Did you vote in the affirmative?
Yes.
Okay. And I think Councilmember Green may have already exited, so my apologies for the late count. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to reconvene the regular session. Mr. Standish, roll call.
Vice Mayor. Councilmember Bowen.
Here.
Councilmember Green.
Here.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Here.
Councilmember Mickelson. Councilmember Solomon.
Here.
And Mayor Winfield.
Here. So we have 5 of 7 council members present. Council Member Nicholson and Vice Mayor Barrett may be joining us later in the meeting. I'd like to ask that the flag video be presented, and I've invited Council Member Jones-Ivy to lead the Pledge of Allegiance this evening. Joyce, you're on mute.
Okay, my apologies. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Mr. Standish will announce upcoming meetings.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The The Stormwater Utility Commission will hold their next meeting on May 20th at 4 p.m. via Zoom. The May 25th Board of Adjustment meeting has been canceled. The Planning and Zoning Commission will meet next on June 1st at 6 p.m. via Zoom. And then the Town Council's next regular session will be held on June 2nd at 6 p.m. via Zoom. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. This evening, Councilmember Jones-Ivey will recognize Zaylee Fairley, a fifth grader at Lehman Academy. Councilmember Jones-Ivey.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. It is my honor to introduce Zaylee Fairley, a fifth grader at Lehman Academy. Zaylee is a bright and talented young student with an attitude to succeed and a heart to serve. As an honors student, Zaylee goes above and beyond in both her studies and in her will to serve her community. She volunteers her recess time to help clean the cafeteria and is always willing to jump in whenever the faculty needs help. Zaylee also enjoys participating in the Odyssey of the Mind program each year, which is a national problem-solving program. In addition to her drive at school, Zaylee is a top-ranked gymnast and practices 12 hours a week. She performs at the national level and placed number one in her age group at state level, and she placed number two at regionals. And as if that's not enough, this young lady also takes voice and piano lessons. It's clear that Zaylee has the drive to reach the stars, and we are so proud to recognize her as our spotlight on youth, and we wish you all the best.
Thank you, Councilmember Jones-Ivey. Zaylee, if you're with us this evening, you are a beautiful young lady, incredible, brilliant mind. And we wish you much success in the future, and congratulations to your parents. Are there other council reports this evening? Okay, seeing none, we'll go to Ms. Jacobs. We'll present her report.
Mr. Mayor, I have no report this evening.
All right, thank you. The agenda will remain as posted. I'd like to, again, thank everyone for joining us this evening, and I appreciate all those who've helped prepare for tonight's meeting. As we all know, there's a lot of work that goes into it. This meeting is taking place online for a bit longer while we wait until the renovation of the town council chambers is completed and will allow for the community's continued ability to participate in these public meetings. In order to participate tonight, one must be logged into Zoom directly by computer or telephone. I'd like to remind participants how this will work. Staff and members of the council, except for the individual that has the floor, will mute their microphones throughout the meeting to ensure as smooth and efficient meeting as possible. During times when the public can participate, staff will enable you to unmute your microphone at the appropriate time. If you wish to address the council on any agenda item or during the call to audience, please raise your hand only when I announce it's appropriate to do so. There are two ways to do this. For those participating on any platform other than by phone, place your cursor towards the bottom middle of the page and look for the raised hand icon. Once the raised hand icon has been located, click on the raised hand icon to raise your hand to request to speak. For those participating via phone, press star 9 to raise your hand. Once your hand is raised, staff will be alerted to your request to speak. At the appropriate time, I will call on those with their hands raised to address the council. I will then announce your name and staff will unmute your access so you can speak. If you would like to have your video enabled, please request so prior to your comments and staff will enable your video. Once you are done speaking, staff will move you back to the attendee list. You may experience a momentary disconnect while changing roles. Please make sure that you are not also muted on your personal device. As with all town council meetings, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Also, speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes. A timer will be used as with in-person meetings, and we ask that you please respect the three-minute limit. Currently this evening, there are 54 participants. That includes the council, staff, and members of the public. At this time, we will go to call to audience. If you would like an opportunity to speak, to call to audience, this would be on any topic other than an agendized item. This would be your opportunity to do so. And at present, I have two raised hands. Pursuant to the Arizona Open Meeting Law, mayor and council are not allowed to discuss, respond to, or take legal action on matters raised during call to audience. At the conclusion of call to audience, council members may direct staff to review the matter, ask that the matter be placed on a future agenda, or respond to criticism made by speakers. If you wish to address the council on a matter not on the agenda, please notify us by clicking the raised hand icon on your computer or pressing star 9 on your phone now. I would like to call on Mr. Randy Carr to address the council. Steve, please enable Mr. Carr's microphone to speak. Staff, have we enabled Mr. Carr's microphone?
Yes, we have, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Carr, you may need to unmute on your end. Mr. Carr, we're not able to hear you. You may need to unmute on your end. If we're not able to connect, I will come back to you. We'll move on to the next person in queue. So my apologies, Mr. Carr. You may want to exit out and re-enter, and that may correct the problem. I'd like to call on Mr. Ray Barth to address the council. Staff, please enable Mr. Barth's microphone to speak. Mr. Barth?
Yes, thank you. Name is Ray Barth. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. I want to thank the mayor, council members, town manager, town attorney, and the Conservation Fund for your efforts to negotiate the purchase of the Stoso property. Oro Valley has every right to retain the recreational zoning of this property for its citizens. I hope that an agreement will be reached soon, but if not, please take whatever action is needed to protect its recreational area and return the property to public use. Thank you again for all your efforts.
I'd like to call on 780-4554 to address the council. Staff, please enable 780-4554's microphone. Your microphone has been enabled. Yes.
You can hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Good evening. My name is Teresa Morrow, and I'm a 19-year resident of Oro Valley. My comments are regarding the former Gasoso Golf Course. It is time to end this three-year nightmare. If Mr. Lopez Romspen is unwilling to cooperate, the town council must condemn the property immediately. We, the residents, faithfully attend the town council meetings to inquire about the status. Each time we receive an obligatory statement, not a true transparent update, to pacify the residents. We didn't even get that tonight, but this only results in further frustration and outrage. We have shown our unwavering commitment for the conservation of the 202 acres. The town council must immediately move to resolve this. Get the unscrupulous Romspen gang out of Oro Valley. Thank you for the opportunity to speak.
Thank you. I'd like to call on Ms. Gail Mateer to address the council. Staff, please enable Ms. Mateer's microphone to speak.
Hello, can you hear
me? Hello, yes.
Hi, Mayor Winfield. This is Gail Mateer. I'm a resident of Oro Valley. On behalf of Preserve Estoso, I would just like to
once again thank the council and particularly Ms. Jacobs for their work. I know that you're probably frustrated. We're all frustrated, and echoing the comments of some of the earlier people who just spoke, you know, we all want an end to this nightmare. It just needs to end. We are here to help. We're here to support. And we thank you for your efforts. But please, let's try to get this done. Thanks so much for your time.
Thank you. I'd like to call on Mr. Randy Carr to address the council staff. Please enable Mr. Carr's microphone to speak. Mr. Carr. Mr. Carr, your microphone has been enabled. Mr. Carr, your microphone has been enabled. My apologies for the technical difficulties, but we're not able to hear you this evening. I'm going to close call to audience at this time, and we'll go to presentations. We have Mr. Standish, presentation one.
Presentation and possible discussion of the town's fiscal year 2021 financial update through March 2021.
So Finance and Budget Administrator Wendy Gomez will present the financials this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. There's always a little bit of a delay when you're promoted to speaking, so sorry about that. Yes, I am pleased to be presenting our fiscal year update through March. We are now three quarters of the way through the fiscal year. And before I begin, I just wanted to kind of draw our attention again to some of the revised language that we've included in the executive summary of the council communication. I think at this point, staff can confidently state that the town has successfully navigated the challenges posed by COVID-19. You know, about 14 months ago, we were walking into what was really a complete unknown. And through a combination of our conservative revenue projections, some of the spending reductions that we made as part of the budget, and then the fact that our revenues have really significantly outperformed our expectations, we are expecting to end the year in a very strong position. So I did just want to throw that out there before I jump in. Next slide, please. So we'll start off with the general fund, as we always do, just walking through the main revenue categories, starting off with local sales tax. Things continue to look very positive there. We are at about $15.6 million in collections through March, which is just over 86% of the budget. We are expecting to end the year at about $20.4 million, which is about $2.3 million, or 12% above the budgeted amount, continuing to see some of the strong performance in the categories that we've seen throughout the year. Construction, retail is very strong, has been strong throughout throughout this whole experience with COVID, and utility collections looking well, and as well as online collections continue to outperform. State shared revenues, things looking positive there too. We are at about $10.5 million in collections through March, which is just under 80% of the budget. We are expecting to end the year at about $13.6 million, which equates to about 3% over budget, or about $400,000. Those categories are trending as expected, and actually our vehicle license tax and state shared sales taxes are trending slightly above budgeted levels. So those year-end estimates reflect those two areas. Charges for services, we've talked about this category previously. This is one of those areas that was hit a bit by COVID, primarily in the area of our fare box revenues and some of our parks and rec user fees for programs. We're currently sitting at about $1.4 million in collections through March. That's just over 64% of the budget. We are expecting to come in about 12% below budget in that category, or about $270,000. Almost entirely due to those two areas, the fare box and some of those parks user fees. Licenses and permits continues to look well. We are already over budget by about $1 million. Currently through March, we were sitting at 385 single-family residential permits issued. Through April, we are at 423, in case anybody was curious. That is actually the highest we've been at since 2005. So that is exciting. We are expecting to end the year about $1.5 million over budget in that category. Again, things looking strong, both on the residential side and the commercial side. And then all other includes our other categories, grants being a significant chunk of that, particularly the Arizona CARES funding. And I might also note that we have now included one half of our $11 million in expected American Rescue Plan funding. So we have included the first half of that payment, which is about $5.5 million, in our year-end estimates. So you can see that reflected in the $13.2 million year-end estimate in that category. In total for the general fund on the revenue side, we are expecting to end the year just under $9 million over budget, which is about 21%. And again, that's due to the categories here that we've been taking a look at, the permit revenues, the additional sales tax collections, and then obviously the ARP, the American Rescue Plan funding, being a big chunk of that. Next slide, please. On the expenditure side of things, for personnel, we are sitting at about $19.1 million in actuals through March. That's just under 66% of the budget. We are looking to end the year at about $28.3 million. That is about 2.5% below budget, about $700,000 savings there. The actuals through March reflect the timing of the payrolls. So I believe we're sitting at about 18 payrolls processed out of 26 through March. The year-end estimate that we've included here reflects some pretty sizable savings in transit personnel costs. So that's just due to COVID and the reduced demand for the transit system there. Parks personnel costs as well. And also, if you recall, in the police department, we did include capacity both on the revenue side and the personnel expenditure side for a potential school resource officer at Lehman Academy. That did not come to fruition, so that has been peeled off of our year-end estimates. And then some other vacancies just across the board in various departments as positions become vacant, you know, still continuing to analyze and assess the need and the best fit for those positions moving forward. On the operations and maintenance side, we have actuals of about $7.2 million through March, which is just under 63% of the budget. We are expecting to come in a little over $11 million in actuals for that category. That equates to about 3.5% or $400,000 below budget there. Some of the main areas that we're expecting to see savings include fuel costs, contract personnel services and parks and recreation for programming, and then just overall savings that we're seeing across departments as they continue to be prudent with their spending. Capital, we are at actuals of just under $600,000 through March, which is about 38% of the budget. We're expecting to come in just a smidge below budget there, and really that's due almost entirely to the expected carryover of the push house improvements at Steam Pump Ranch. And then our transfers out, pretty standard there. We will come in on budget in that category. That is our transfers to debt service, which have already happened. And then we now have two of the three budgeted CIP transfers completed to the capital fund. In total for the general fund expenditures, we are at just under 65% in actuals through March, or $28.9 million. We are expecting to end the year about 3% below budget, 2.7%, which is just over $1 million. And again, that's tied to those personnel savings and the operations and maintenance savings. Next slide, please. Moving on to the chart for the general fund through March, things looking good there. The revenues of $37.1 million compared to last year's actuals of $30.6 million. The big chunk of that is the CARES funding at about $5.3 million. But even if you shave that off, we're still about $1.2 million over last fiscal year. Expenditures are about flat at $28.9 million compared to $28.7 million last fiscal year. We are currently sitting at a surplus in the general fund of about $8.3 million. We are expecting to end the year with a surplus of about $8.9 million. Again, that does include the first half of the ARP funding. As a reminder, we did budget to use fund balance of about $1.2 million. We are currently expecting to end the year just under $30 million as a year-end fund balance. That would equate to about 77% of budgeted expenditures for our policy, town council policy, which exceeds the amount by about $19 million, so $18.6 million. So again, that does include one half of the American Rescue Plan dollars, but aside from that, expecting to go into fiscal year 21-22 in a strong position. With the ability to make that $10 million PSPRS payment that you've authorized, that council has authorized, I should say. Moving on to the highway fund, next slide, please. Things pretty standard there. No real big changes from our last report on the revenue side. The HRF revenues still continue to look good. We're at about $2.7 million through March. That's about 78% of budget. We are expecting to come in about 3% over budget, just based on how we're trending year to date. We've talked about the grant revenues that are in the fund, and those were budgeted reimbursements for our LaToya project and the temporary construction inspectors. Those positions have wrapped up. The project is significantly complete, and so we won't be billing any additional reimbursements for that. On the expenditure side of things, we are sitting at about $2.4 million in actuals for the highway fund through March. The figures do include the fall portion of our pavement preservation program, and some of the spring costs are starting to trickle in as well. For year-end estimates, we're expecting to come in below budget, about $500,000 or 13%. That sounds like a lot, but really the big chunk of that is expected rollover of about $300,000 for the Lambert Lane overlay CIP project, as well as the personnel savings for the construction inspectors that we had mentioned. I do believe we had budgeted those for the full fiscal year. So obviously with that project complete, we will see some savings there. Next slide, please. Here's a chart for the highway fund through March. Looking at the revenues first, $2.7 million in actuals compared to $3.2 million for last year. As a reminder, some of the actuals that are reflected in last fiscal year include the roughly $200,000 in one-time HRF funding that we received through the state, as well as obviously the LaToya project was ongoing last fiscal year, and so those actuals did include reimbursements from PAG for those personnel costs. Expenditures are at about $2.4 million, so up just a smidge compared to last year's actuals. That's just due to timing of capital projects that are budgeted in the fund, as well as the payment preservation program and the timing of those billings. We're currently sitting at about a surplus of about $350,000 in the fund. We are expecting to end the year with a surplus of about $250,000. And again, that reflects the rollover, the anticipated rollover of a good chunk of that Lambert Lane overlay project. Just as a reminder, we had budgeted to use about $160,000 in fund balance in the highway fund, and our current estimates would bring us to an ending balance of about $1.1 million in the fund as of June 30. Next slide, please. Last but not least, the Community Center Fund, our revenues. We'll talk about the contracted revenues first. Those are still looking good at about 83% of budget, or $2.9 million in actuals through March. We are expecting to end the year about 6.6% above budget, which equates to about $230,000 for year end for the contracted operating revenues. For comparison to last fiscal year, we are currently up about $400,000 or 16% higher than we were at this point last fiscal year. The town operating revenues, we've been watching those closely. Haven't really had to change those year-end estimates by much for quite a while now, so they're sticking steady. We are expecting to come in under budget by about $500,000 in that particular revenue source. And then our half-cent sales tax revenues, obviously with things looking good, as we've mentioned when we were talking about the general fund, retail, strong online collections, all of that is going to help the community center fund as well. And so we are expecting to come in about $300,000 or 11% over budget for that. On the expenditures for the community center fund, the contracted expenditures are sitting at about 73% of budget, or about $3.3 million through March. We are currently expecting to come in about 1.5% below budget, which equates to about $70,000 for that category. As a reference to last fiscal year, currently through March, the expenditures are about 10% lower than they were last fiscal year, or about $360,000. The town operating expenditures are going to be below budget due to COVID. We're hoping to offset a good chunk of the revenue shortfall with personnel and O&M savings just as a result of the facility being closed. We are looking at savings of about $115,000 right now, or about 12% budget. Next slide, please. Here's the chart for the Community Center Fund. Things pretty expected there. We've got $5.5 million in revenues compared to $5.1 million last year. So really what that is the contracted revenues, some of those golf revenues, as well as the local sales tax collections, the half cent, helping to offset shortfalls on the town operating side. And so we're at $5.5 million in actuals compared to last year of $5.1 million through March. The expenditures, no surprise there, with the facility having been closed for a portion of the year, expenditures are down $4 million in actuals through March compared to last year of $4.6 million. Currently, the fund has a surplus year-to-date of about $1.5 million. We are expecting to end the year with a surplus in the fund of about $1.3 million. I did want to mention a good chunk of that is due to the timing of the irrigation project and the revised year-end estimates that we have in there currently. Aside from some of the initial consulting and design work, none of the construction expenditures obviously will be hitting this fiscal year. As a reminder, we had budgeted an increase in fund balance in the fund of about $220,000, and currently our year-end estimates would bring us to an ending fund balance of just over $2.1 million in our fund. Next slide. That is it for our presentation. I would be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Ms. Gomez. Council, are there questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you. Wendy, could we go back to the expenditures slide, please? I just had a question.
Sure, if that can be brought up again.
Okay. That would be, I believe, slide 3. Okay, you know, I did some quick math. These are the numbers through 9 months of the year, and it looks like we've been spending approximately $3.2 million per month over 9 months. But the year-end estimate, when I run that through 12 months, it appears to me the last 3 months would involve greatly increased spending, up to 50% more per month for the last 3 months to reach that projected year-end estimate. Can you elaborate on some of the details as to what will be happening in the last 3 months that would drive expenditures so much higher than they've been?
Sure. First, initially, I mean, I will say that our year-end estimates are pretty conservative. If anything, I would be hopeful that we'd outperform these estimates. But some of the things that are still going on that we're still expecting, the payrolls, for example, we still have 8 more payrolls that'll hit this fiscal year. For the general fund, those average about $1.3 million each. We also have some of the capital and O&M projects and plans that we had kind of held off on for the first half of the fiscal year. Those are now well underway and progressing. And so we do expect those actuals to ramp up. We also will have one more transfer to the CIP fund to do. That'll post in June. And so those are some of the kind of major things that are playing into that. But again, our year-end estimates are conservative. And so hopefully we'll outperform those projections. But we do need to stay conservative and under-promise and over-deliver.
Okay. And thank you, Wendy. And if I understand you correctly, there's the possibility we might have a surplus that's even larger than what's projected. There's a possibility that that surplus is based upon this year-end estimate of spending, but that would require some pretty aggressive spending over the last 3 months to even get to this 43,370,236 number.
I understand. That's fair. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Councilmember Bowen. Yes, if anything, I would be hopeful again that we would outperform. We have our conservative estimates for this very reason, so we'll continue to watch that and hopefully get some even better results by year end.
Okay. Thank you, Wendy. Appreciate it. That was my question, Mr. Mayor. Thank
you. Other questions? Seeing none, Ms. Gomez, thank you for your presentation. And also I want to compliment the town manager and, of course, the entire finance department and staff as a whole, who, as you began your presentation, successfully navigating the COVID-19. So thank you. Looks like Councilmember Solomon, you have a comment or question?
Mr. Mayor, it's more of a point of order, if you will indulge me for a minute. Our fire chief, Chief Kerr, has rejoined the meeting. And I believe he had attempted to speak during a call through the audience regarding national emergency responders. So I don't know if now's the time you could recognize him, or you want to wait till the end of the presentations to try to recognize him.
Mr. Rothschild, what's my...
In your discretion, Mayor.
My discretion, thank you. Certainly thank you, Councilmember Solomon. I will... So Councilmember, Mr. Carr, I don't see... Mr. Carr, if you could raise your hand...
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of council. I don't know what occurred, though. I didn't ask to speak on this topic, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Okay. Did you have a question, Councilmember Solomon?
No, I thought he wanted to speak on that topic.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I did not.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Okay, we'll go to presentation item two, Mr. Standish.
Presentation, Youth Art Program by the Arts and Culture Ambassadors.
Good evening. Good evening, Mayor and Council. It's lovely to be here with you this evening. And wow, those financials were exciting. Anyway, I'm here this evening to present the last presentation of our youth art exhibits, virtual exhibits for the school year. And I'm so pleased to share with you this evening Melissa Samsel's many classrooms over at Innovation Academy. She always steps up for us and makes these wonderful videos and wonderful presentations. And more importantly, she's a wonderful art teacher. So I want to thank you all for indulging all of us art lovers out here in the community by viewing and enjoying these little snippets into the life of children, into the life of our schools, and into the life of our arts education. And I want to wish you all, everyone who's attending, hopefully many of the families, a beautiful summer and an end to the school year.
Thank you for watching Innovation Academy's Virtual Fine Art Show. We'll start with kindergarten. They learn to draw their self-portrait using basic shapes. Kindergarten artists learned about artist Claude Monet and were inspired by many of his lily paintings and this artwork. This artwork was done virtually online to support our Art to Remember fundraiser. These ladybugs turned out adorable. These first grade artists learned about air molecules and how hot air rises. We learned that that helps make the hot air balloon go up. They got to design their own hot air balloon and then added their photo just to show how much fun it would be to fly in a hot air balloon. This printmaking lesson was inspired by artist Andy Warhol and followed up with some beautiful clay flowers. Another art lesson that was done virtually, these tigers were inspired by Henri Rousseau and used for our Art to Remember fundraiser. These turtles might be one of my favorites. The students get to learn about the endangered hawksbill sea turtle and things we can do to recycle, reduce, and reuse to help our environment. After they created their watercolor sea turtle, they then got to make their turtles out of clay. These second grade llamas are too cute. They were done virtually for our fundraiser as well, and we're incorporating a lot of pattern. These PA Mondrian cubes were quite a challenge, but turned out super successful. I was very proud of the second grade students creating these. The third graders created this Zentangle watercolor art. It's been a stressful year, and this was a great relaxing lesson for them. Third grade students learned about Native American art, specifically the dream catchers. They had a lot of fun with this, learning that in the center, the bad dreams are caught and the good dreams travel down the feathers. This lesson is one of my favorites, inspired by local artist Ron Burns. Ron Burns is an artist that is commissioned to create works of art and donates part of his money back to the Arizona Humane Society to help animals. Our students wrote about how they would donate their money to help different charities as well. Fifth grade had a lot of fun learning about different castles around Europe. They had different ways to create this architecture unit, either on paper, 2D, or making kind of a pop-up castle that folds open. We finished this lesson by having the students make clay dragons. We hope you enjoyed this show. Thanks for viewing the artwork.
My friend just said that she wants to go back to school.
Okay, Ms. Case, is that, do I understand this is your last presentation?
This is it, yes. This is it for this year, and then we'll see what happens next year. But thank you so much. As I said, we all wish we could go back to school and make castles and dragons. So have a beautiful summer, everyone.
Ms. Case, I want to, in behalf of the council, thank you for bringing these presentations to us and the additional effort that it's required through the virtual medium. But it's been greatly appreciated. And we admire Ms. Samsel and the other art teachers that bring this important experience to the youth of our community. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I hope you have a smooth and easy meeting this evening.
Always. item three, Mr. Standish.
Presentation of the 2021 Bill Adler Historical Expository Writing Contest winners.
Before I go to that, I neglected to call on Councilmember Green. I saw a hand light.
I just wanted to thank Sasha for what she's doing. I think during the pandemic, art for children was almost totally passive. They were looking at a screen for hours every day, and to have an opportunity to build something with their hands, create something that's three-dimensional is really exceptional. And I just want to thank Sasha for bringing that to our attention. That's all. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Now, it's my pleasure this evening to congratulate the winners for the Bill Adler Historical Expository Writing Contest winners. Knowing Bill for a number of years, it warms my heart to recognize these young people and also reflect on Bill's contribution to our community and continuing contribution. Winners have received gift cards and certificates or mailed to them this past Monday. So they may or may not have received them in the mail yet, but they soon will. First place went to Ellie Cardle Rohel for her essay on the history of music in Tucson. So congratulations to Ellie for winning first place. Second place is Violet Burge for her essay on the, on the history of music in Tucson. So both of these young ladies, Miss Rohel and Miss Burge, for their essays. Third place was Alas Dare McElhaney for his essay on the history of horses in the region. An honorable mention went to James Mitchell for his essay on the history of U of A football. So we congratulate these young people for being recognized for their efforts. And I believe this evening the Historic Preservation Commission Chair Bill is with us, and Vice Chair Kruger is present. And they would also like to congratulate the winners this evening. Chair Bill. If we could unmute Mr. Bill's microphone and perhaps enable his video.
Am I unmuted?
You're unmuted, yes.
Well, we'd like to really thank the teachers that worked with the students to get them excited on this project. It's certainly great to have young people understand the historic significance of our community. And I believe we also have Commissioner Kruger here was very involved in this project, and I think she'd like to share her thoughts too.
Thank you. Vice Chair Kruger.
I was so excited to be a participant in this project and was able to read the essays that were submitted by these fourth graders. They were all outstanding. And despite COVID and some of the delays that we had a fantastic response to this contest. So congratulations to all the students who were not only winners, but participants. And we are grateful to them and hope that they enjoyed the process. I certainly enjoyed reading the essays. They were just all fantastic.
Thank you to both of you for your participation. And I don't know if these young people and their families are with us this evening, but if you are, congratulations. And we appreciate your participation. Thanks. I will go to the consent agenda on our agenda this evening. I move to approve the consent agenda.
I'll second,
Mr. Mayor.
I believe the vice mayor seconded that. Any discussion? Mm-hmm. Mr. Standish, if you could read the items before we vote.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Item A, minutes May 5th and May 6th, 2021. Item B, resolution number R21-19, approving the agenda committee assignment for the period of June 1st, 2021 to August 31st, 2021. Item C, approval to initiate amendments to Town Code Chapter 17, Floodplain and Erosion Hazard Management, to address Arizona Department of Water Resources Community Assistance Contact Audit comments. And item D, approval of any direction and delegation of authority to the town manager, town attorney, and or necessary staff as discussed in executive session.
Thank you. If we could have a roll call vote, Mr. Standish.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen?
Yes.
Councilmember Green?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon?
He said yes.
Oh, thank you. And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. The motion to approve the consent agenda was approved 7-0. Thank you. We'll go to regular agenda item one, Mr. Standish.
Discussion and possible action to adopt the Parks and Recreation Master Plan.
Our Parks and Recreation Director, Christy Diaz-Trahan, will introduce this item.
Yes, thank you, Mayor, Council. Good evening. So as you know, the Park and Recreation Master Plan was a priority for your fiscal year 2020-2021 Strategic Leadership Plan. You believed our community needed a well-thought-out, strategically planned roadmap for future park and recreation policy and funding decisions. This journey kicked off in September of 2019 with the request for proposal for consulting services. Five firms submitted proposals, and we ultimately chose Pros Consulting. We got going in late 2019, early 2020, meeting with town staff that included our chief of police and representatives from water utility and public works and the stormwater utility, communications, administration, information technology, the clerk's office, and of course, your parks and recreation team. The next meetings were with our user groups and stakeholder groups that included representatives from the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance, the Oro Valley Sports Alliance, Oro Valley Historical Society, the Youth Advisory Council, Amphi School Districts, and representatives from the Sonoran Desert Mountain Bike Group, just among others. In February of 2020, members from the Park and Recreation Advisory Board were assigned a task, dates, times, and locations for each member to go to different parks and areas in our community to gather more information using the put a dot on a board to tell us where your priorities are strategy. And that kicked off in March of last year. It was a really great plan, but we had to come to a screeching halt mid-March as the world as we know it stopped, and we had to pivot. We quickly adjusted to an online platform. A dedicated web page was developed to collect and give feedback. Department weekly e-blasts were sent out. Newspaper ads were placed. A statistically valid survey was mailed to Oro Valley residents, and a modified online survey was deployed, all resulting in thousands and thousands of comments that would become the foundation of this plan. There was a strong emphasis on the trail systems, including identifying missing gaps to connect to parks and schools and shopping, identifying parks as gathering spaces for events and economic development and community connection, and identifying programs for community events and for youth and for seniors. The plan was coming together, and phase one information was presented to the PRAB and to you in May of last year. Phase two was putting all of this information together to develop a plan. It started in August, and we met with the Parks and Recreation Advisory Board monthly to provide work updates, gather feedback, and to ensure we were on the right track. Concept plans were developed for the James D. Cree Park, Riverfront Park, Naranja Park, Steam Pump Ranch, and the Community Center. Those were presented to PRAB in November of last year, and then from mid-November through mid-December, posted on the town's webpage for community comment. Based on that feedback, revised plans were completed and presented to our community in PRAB in January. Next came the connectivity analysis, and in which concept plans were presented to PRAB with the idea, again, of connecting to additional trails, schools, parks, and other jurisdictions. The 10-year CIP plan emerged next, identifying life cycle replacement, expanded services, and visionary projects. The grand aspirational total is upwards of $62 million. Like most master plans, aspirational is oftentimes fiscally unattainable, but it is necessary because you never know when opportunities present themselves. From here, proposed priority list was developed and generally supported by the PRAB and Council during meetings in March. This list included maintaining the existing infrastructure that was strongly supported by our community. It included improved parking lot and tennis courts at the community center, ensuring highly desirable aquatic center was maintained and current, and focusing on restoration of the historically significant buildings at Steam Pump Ranch, expanding and enhancing the trail system as a phased approach, as well as phasing in community center interior and Naranja Park. The community center interior included opening the top floor so that more youth and senior programs could take place by moving the restaurant downstairs so it's associated with the golf court, golf pro shop. And at Naranja Park, doubling the number of multi-sport fields, adding a community splash pad and basketball courts and pickleball courts and walking trails, additional restrooms and parking and circulation. The priority list checked a lot of boxes that our residents voiced as strongly supporting. The plan was presented to the Park and Recreation Advisory Board on April 20th of 2021 and was unanimously approved. Tonight is a milestone moment for you, for Oro Valley Parks and Recreation, and most importantly for our residents. Approval of this plan will provide a community, our community, a roadmap of future park and recreation capital investments, key partnership initiatives, and focused recreation program. This plan is accumulation of more than 18 months of work from my team, our consultants, our board, you, and our residents. And for that, I want to thank you all. We should all be proud of the work that has been done and the outstanding results that will ultimately be implemented. And with that, I would like to turn the rest of this presentation over to Mike Spetz, who will guide us through a PowerPoint, and then we will open it up for questions. Thank you.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you, Christy. Thank you, Mayor, Vice Mayor, Town Council. Very much appreciate the opportunity to provide a quick summary, though I think Christy just did a great job of doing that. But I will run through a very brief presentation, all of the information you have seen previously, but hopefully those out in the Zoom world will be able to see this information and also recognize the familiarity of it. Or their familiarity with it and going from there. So next slide. Next slide. Oh. Do you want me to share?
Mr. Mayor, I missed your name. We're working on the PowerPoint slide. It froze, so we're getting it back started.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. So again, just wanted to touch very quickly on demographics. And this is exceptionally important simply because of the fact that, you know, Parks and Recreation is meant to provide services and experiences to your community. So understanding who we're serving today and who we're looking to serve in the future is very critical component to all of the technical information that follows. A quick summary of the community input themes and prioritized needs. The capital improvement plan that Christy just spoke to, and then the themes around implementing the plan. And then, of course, any questions, concerns, comments, suggestions that you may have. Next slide. And then next slide.
So we're apparently having some, go ahead.
Yes, Mr. Mayor. Mike, if you wouldn't mind sharing, we're having some issues on this side with the PowerPoint.
Sure, so. No problem. On 1 second here, okay. Okay, so demographics very quickly. Your community in the towards the end of 2019 was approximately 46,000 people and anticipated to grow to about 55,000 people. Now, all of this information is from the Environmental Systems Research Institute. They are the global leader in data and market research. And, you know, I think it's important to recognize that this information, more up-to-date information, obviously, will be available to you on true numbers, you know, later this year as the U.S. Census reports out formally. From an age segmentation perspective, it tells the story that you are a community that has good balance, but certainly skewed to the 55 and older community, in which, you know, in 2019, you were approximately 49% of the population. And again, based on the projections, simply will be somewhere close to 58% of 55 and older. But I think it's important to recognize we have a tendency to lump groups of together. And the 55 and older crowd doesn't necessarily get the fair shake because it's very different, especially in 2021, to consider programming and experiences for a 55 to 64 year old versus a 75 year old. It's important to break these age segments down, not just in 10 year segments, but similarly to what we do with children, which is where we start to break them down to, you know, toddlers and preschoolers and, you know, young elementary and middle school and high school. It is important to recognize that breaking age segmentation down for the 55 and older crowd is exceptionally important. And I know that Christy and her staff are very focused on this going forward. In terms of community input and prioritized needs, these were all the focus group, the town hall meetings, and even the information that kind of came through from the website was really, there was an exceptional amount of strong advocacy and appreciation for the system. Where there were opportunities to do some sort of, you know, light touch economic development through park development, this could be the tennis courts, the pickleball courts, your golf courses, and, you know, even considering the potential development out of the regional park, Naranja. In terms of your existing system, there was certainly, as Christy expressed earlier, a need to and a desire to continue to invest in the existing system. Open space preservation and trails and pathways were exceptionally important. And of course, doing this all within financial strategies that create a sustainable system. You have seen all of these slides here before, but this is the prioritization of needs. Just simply, and I will not read through the entire list, but the high priority simply means that your community finds these important and you have the highest area of unmet need, meaning that if opportunities arise that you would want to expand upon these services. The medium priority, you would want to strategically expand upon these services, but not carte blanche throw resources at them. And then the lower priority, I don't necessarily love that term, but it simply means that you're doing a good job of currently meeting those needs, but need to always consider where there are opportunities to expand based on demographic changes and growth within your community. When we looked at your prioritization, just the high priority programs by household type, you can see the listing and then you can see the townwide. When we looked at it across five different household types, you can see a lot of consistency in the high priority across the five household types. All the shaded circles kind of indicate priority. The unshaded circles indicate not priority. So you would expect, obviously, that households with children ages 0 to 9 would not place adult learning classes and senior programs and services in the high priority category. However, when you consider obviously households 55 and older and 70 plus without children, they, of course, would place those programs in high priority. So it gives you an understanding of kind of taking your demographics and really understanding how you need to target market your programs to different age segments in your community. Same exercise with the park facility and amenity prioritized needs. Of course, right at the top, natural surface trails, multi-use paved paths, and then, of course, open space conservation areas that have trails in them as well. Again, the prioritized high priority list of facilities and amenities is greater than the list associated with programs and services. But again, a lot of consistency across your community based on the number of shaded circles that resonate with the townwide high priority needs. So moving on, the capital improvement plan, just very quickly as a reminder, we did, of course, divide this up into the three buckets. The first bucket being life cycle replacement, the second bucket being opportunities to expand services, which were reflected in the concept plans, as Chrissy mentioned, and of course, the big picture projects that required, far more thinking or will require far more thinking when it comes to financially implementing them, such things as Naranja Park and the community center, both come up at the top of the list given their, if I not remember correctly, full build out of both of those were each eight figures. So as Christy mentioned, this was the overall summary by tier. You can see most of the projects, most of the money, more than 50% of the dollars and cents are in the visionary projects. And of those visionary projects, as mentioned before, vast majority of those dollars are associated with the community center, as well as Naranja Park. When we prioritized them, we ended up with about $16 million associated with life cycle replacement. Again, this is not meant to be all something that needs to be done in the first year to 5 years. This is spread out over time. And I think the point to be made about sustainable life cycle replacement is that it never stops. It's no different than your home. There are different aspects of your home that are in need of life cycle replacement. An AC unit is likely going to need to be life cycle replaced before somebody's roof. And that's your home. And all of that was maybe built at about the same time. You have parks that have been built at various stages that have far more assets and amenities. So there's just this always revolving need to continue to do life cycle replacement. So though you may be done with this list in 10 years, you will likely be starting another list or have a continuing list to build on for the next 10 years. In terms of pathways, these were very much aligned with your comments as well as the PRAB's comments. But again, these came out to be the areas or the pathway connections that came out of the connectivity analysis that were of the highest priority. And this came out to about $6 million. A lot of, and all of the detail is in the master plan, but there are improvements to the shared use pathway system throughout the entire community. It's not necessarily just focused, shall we say, north of Tangerine or south of Tangerine. It certainly is, quote unquote, spread out. And then in terms of the visionary projects, these were the projects that we had identified as high priority. Again, the $39 million is the grand total. We recognized them when we talked with you all that you wanted to have your share be approximately $25 million or in that ballpark. And in the plan, we certainly identified a funding strategy in which we were, I think, in the neighborhood of about $28 million that would be funded by the town, and the additional dollars and cents would either be through regional efforts, grants, or partnerships. So from an implementation standpoint, some very high-level strategies, more detail is in the master plan, but of course, continuing to maintain the system in terms of the acreage that you have per population, connectivity is a huge driver in your community and will continue to be for decades to come. Parkland improvements, this speaks to the need to continue to life cycle replace, but also to as you do improvements, to ensure that you're doing them at a best practice level. Economic development through parks, opportunities, as mentioned before, community center, steam pump ranch, Naranja Park. And when we talk about the community center, we're not necessarily, again, referring to the facility in its of itself, but more the tennis courts, the pickleball courts, and the golf course. Programming, and staff has done a phenomenal job over the last 5 years of ramping up programming as the community center has become a part of your portfolio, but continuing to utilize your spaces in alignment with the community needs. And I will simply state that, you know, the best programmers overcome challenges, but the biggest challenge to overcome is to ensure that you have best practice spaces in which to hold those programs. And then operations and staffing. Staff is exceptional, had a wonderful opportunity.
We lose our presenter.
To work with them over the next time. I'm sorry. Oh.
I think we lost you there for a moment, Mike.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not sure where you lost me, but I will just reiterate from a programming perspective, again, ensuring that you're providing programs and services that are in alignment with community needs and ensuring that you have the best practice spaces to go with that. And then, of course, operations and staffing. You know, Christy has developed a wonderful staff, not just of technically savvy individuals, but also individuals that are focused on the customer, and you have a great culture. So continuing to move forward with that and having a focus on the fact that as your system does grow, you need to have the organizational and staffing capacity around which to manage and maintain the system going forward. And then, of course, financing the park system, park and recreation system. Again, this is about funding and partnerships and leveraging the resources that are available to you to not just create a financially sustainable system, but one that continues to provide high quality experiences to your community. And with that, I will take any questions, concerns, suggestions you may have. I will stop my share screen, but if you want me to pull it back up, I'm more than happy to do so.
I appreciate that, Mike. What I'd like to do at this point is invite if there's any members of the public that would like to speak to this particular topic, this is your opportunity to do so. So if you could go to the middle of your screen and click on that raised hand icon. Again, if you would like to speak to this particular topic, the Parks and Recreation Master Plan, this is your opportunity to do so. Two raised hands. Again, if you'd like an opportunity to speak on the Parks and Recreation Master Plan, this is your opportunity to do so. I'd like to call on Ray to address the council. Staff, please enable Ray's microphone to speak.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, I'm sorry. I my last name is Barnes, B-A-R-N-E-S. I am used to going on Zoom meetings where everybody knows who Ray is, but there are at least two Rays out there today. So anyway, I wish to thank the mayor and council and all the staff and all the wonderful residents in the community for maintaining and promoting and keeping a great place to live. I am a resident of Oro Valley. I've been here a resident at least 28 years now. And I am a bicyclist, not a professional type, but a casual type that uses the multi-use paths a lot. And I'm also a member of our Oro Valley Community Center. And I want to express my support for the master plan, and in specifics, the multi-use paths, and in more specifics, the path along La Cañada connecting the Naranja and Lambert Lane. So I am disappointed that I can't, there's no way safely without driving on the streets to get to the community center from anywhere, even on a private road. So connecting the town hall and the library and the community center between Naranja and Lambert Lane would be awesome, very important. So also just as a note, being a member of the community center, I have noted that many times the parking lot is near capacity. And in all of the many times that I've been there at the community center, I have only seen one bicycle for one day in the bicycle racks. So it's a little bit sad that we are looking at expanding the parking lot. Is that my time up?
I don't see the clock, so continue, Mr. Barnes.
Okay, well, I'm almost done. Thank you. It's a little sad that we have to drive our cars to get to where we exercise, and that we're looking at improving the parking lot capacity the new plan certainly represents the possibility to access via multi-use paths from the other shared use paths. So I think I made my point. Again, thank you, and I'm glad that I had the chance to address you.
Thank you. We're glad as well. Mr. Don Cox would like to address the council. Staff, please enable Mr. Cox's microphone. Mr. Cox? Mr. Cox, your microphone has been enabled. You may need to unmute on your end. Mr. Cox, we're not able to hear you. Mr. Cox, you may want to exit Zoom and retry. Hey, Mr. Cox, we've enabled you on our end. So for the moment, if you exit and come back, I will call on you. But unfortunately, we can't hear you at the moment. So I'm going to open it up to, let me just check again to make sure I don't have any additional raised hands. I do not. So I'll go to council questions. Vice Mayor?
Mayor, sorry, my computer is, come back to me.
Any questions? Councilmember Bowen?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor, and thank you to PROS Consulting. Very, very nice job. I would like for a little bit of clarification regarding the spending on the community center. I see it in two different places under two different categories, and I was just hoping that we could provide a little bit of detail as to the difference and what the money is going to be spent on and what's going to be provided for the two different areas.
The two different projects are simply one is focused on the site, meaning the exterior parking lots, tennis courts, pickleball courts, irrigation at the golf course. That, I believe, is that $7.7 million figure. The other project is the renovations associated with the actual facility itself. And that was, I believe, the original price tag was somewhere in the neighborhood of about $10 million. And the phased one improvements that we had proposed in the master plan was about $5 million. So that's the difference between the two. Really, the $7.7 million is really just taking care of what you already have. It is really the kind of that life cycle replacement. Though it's a big bucket, you're taking care of a lot of different assets and amenities within that bucket.
Okay, and I might be the only one who's confused. I noticed irrigation is included in that sum total. And I'm trying to understand the relationship between what we already collect, which is our half-cent sales tax that's capped at hopefully at $2 million now, and also other monies which may go in there. Is that $7.7 million, is that taking into account our funding sources?
It's not taking into account a direct correlation to a funding source. It is okay. Just the expenditure of the projects.
Okay.
So, okay.
No, thank you for that clarification. I was a bit confused.
You're welcome.
That was my question, Mr. Mayor.
So I have a follow-up with that, Mike. There's the 7.7 life cycle, the 5 million phase one. Phase one would suggest that there may be a phase two, phase three. Could you clarify? And if there are additional phases, what's the price tag on those additional phases in regards to the community center?
So I think the way we had originally approached the project was as we had prepared an entire renovation project, Mayor. And that is what we had presented outwardly, what had been focused for the community to comment on, for PRAB to comment on, both, online, virtual. The community commented through the town's website, but also virtual meetings. So the $10 million was the original price tag. And as a result of our conversations with you all, and in fact, I think it was Vice Mayor Barrett who had kind of made the suggestion to kind of pair the community center project back, the community center renovation, facility renovation project back. And so we kind of worked with the direction that you all had provided us with regards to the dollars and cents that you kind of wanted to see the overall project list. And the one thing that we went back to, the two major projects that we went back to kind of scale back was the Naranja Park, which was originally $17 million. We brought that back to $10 million. The community center, we broke up into a phase one, which really focused on accessibility and ADA access, the elevator, kind of the front entrance, so to speak, to kind of make it that one level. And that is kind of where we stopped. We did not envision, how the plan would then move forward. And so where I'm, and I think one suggestion that I might have for you with regards to the community center as a whole, given the fact that what has been recommended as a priority project in the master plan is just a phase one, is to use the full renovation concept plan as a way to engage the community further in a non-COVID world and be able to hold meetings at the community center, tour the community center, possibly tour other facilities in the region that you can compare and contrast to, and then determine what really the rest of the renovation of the community center could be. But if you choose not to do phase one, then my recommendation would be to say, you know what, take the community center out of play, so to speak, right now, and fully recognize that if you don't have consensus around that project in terms of the floor plan that's been created, the concept that's been created, And really, in a in a COVID world, I think the one place that probably requires a lot more community engagement is the community center. I would pull that out and say, you know what, do a community-driven project around what you want that community center to be that focuses just on the community center and not the community center being just a part of a larger system master plan, if that all makes sense.
That does, Mike. I appreciate it. Vice Mayor Barrett and then Council Member Green.
Thanks. I apologize for earlier. I'm at home and was having visitors in my space. So anyway, thank you. One thing that I think has been a little bit confusing is that this master plan has had a couple of different iterations. And so I'd like some clarity on if this plan was approved, what exactly it is that we are approving. $62 million over the next 10 years and all the concept plans. What exactly are we approving? The document that was on the agenda, just like a little clarification there.
So having lived on, not necessarily lived on the political side, but lived on your side of the table, it's a planning document. And so it's meant to provide you recommendations based on data-driven and strategic thought. Town manager would agree with me that you're not approving the dollars and cents associated with those projects. That is a process that gets approved annually or biannually when you go through your budget process. So what we are providing to you is the information around which to make decisions at a later date that are much more dialed in. From a concept plan perspective, I think this is an exceptional point, and I'm glad that you brought it up. The concept plans are concept plans. They are not what and they are based on what we know about the land today and what can fit within the property and the relationships between the amenities and the experiences. However, when you get into the next phases of taking what is a concept plan until you get it to what we would call a construction document, there's a lot of what I would call much more technical engineering steps that need to be taken. Schematic design, design development, construction document. Typically at those phases of the project, there is cost estimating that is done that does a much better job of dialing in the exact costs. So I'll give you an example. A splash pad at Naranja Park may be cost estimated right now as X, but that is based on a circle thrown down on a map that says, here's a decent size. And the cost estimate is based on, you know, an average of splash pads. But a splash pad could run you a couple $100,000 up to $2 million, depending upon the bells and whistles associated with it. So what you are ultimately approving here is a planning document that is meant to provide strategic direction that you in turn later will have to take individual actions on to approve expenditures associated with the plan. That could include the budget that you do every year, and then of course approve each and every contract that you would enter into, construction contract that you would enter into. I don't know if anybody else would like to add anything, but it's not meant to be something in which you're adopting and saying, we are now adopting a $63 million spending plan for Parks and Recreation over the next 10 years. It is meant to be everything that is potentially could be done with the system. And as you all had asked us a couple of months ago, was to go back and reprioritize that list and laser focus what really could be done within the financial terms that you parameters that you had provided to us. But over the course of a 10-year plan, obviously cost estimates will go up. And they're as close to the current costs as they are right now. But if you were to revisit projects in 5 to 10 years, of course, you're probably revisiting those costs as well.
Okay. As a follow-up, as a planning document, why is it necessary for... Oh, actually, I'll hold that question. Okay, I'm done, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Councilmember Green?
He pretty much answered my question. I mean, what I'm hearing is this is a planning document. There's a lot of opportunity to alter it as needed. And there's also a lot of opportunity to get back to the actual user community. Because what I've discovered in maybe talking to 200 people in the community center, they have some pretty distinct ideas for what needs to be done going forward. So I appreciate what the consultant has just said.
So Member Jones-Ivy. Joyce, you're on mute.
Thanks for clarifying that point, because I was also wondering the same thing about what exactly we were going to be approving tonight. So thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Vice Mayor Barrett.
Thank you. I guess I want to ask my follow-up question. I feel like since it's a planning document, I would suggest that perhaps that the council could not make those final decisions or approve the plan, so to speak, but that the plan be utilized by, you know, the town staff as they bring forward proposals to council, and then over the next, and have that great information about like what the life cycle replacements need to be, what those are going to cost. And then every year as we approve the budget, or this year, if we work through the bonding, you know, we would have that discussion where those get funding, and that's where the plan comes in. Because like, for example, in this plan, it sets out, here's the first phase of Naranja Park. Here's the second phase of Naranja Park. Well, I mean, in my mind, I don't know that that necessarily reflects the exact priorities of the way we may want to go forward in terms of those particular amenities, which ones go first as part of a bond, or which ones come later, pay as you go. And then similarly with the community center, I'm not sure that the divisions necessarily reflect community priorities and some of the priorities of the community center users. And so that's why I'm a little reluctant to approve the plan as it stands and the implications of that. But I feel more confident if we could, you know, utilize it kind of as a baseline planning document and make those decisions moving forward as we have funding available. And I also think that makes sense, since obviously future councils will allocate funding to the priorities that they see that the community needs at that time. So that's my thought and suggestion.
Councilmember Nicholson, I believe you raised your hand, and then Councilmember Green, I want to acknowledge that you would like to speak.
Thanks, Mayor. Mike, when we're doing the irrigation for the golf course, I know was $3 million and it went up by several million dollars. And we hear that, you know, construction costs are going to be 50% higher, 100% higher. How much do you, I mean, first of all, do you think construction costs are going to be going up that much in the next several years? And how much do you plan that into the document as far as how much money we're spending? And
yeah, I wish I had a crystal ball. I mean, yeah, we did these estimates in January, and I think we all know that the costs have escalated. I think things have started to settle down a little bit as demand and supply have started to ramp up coming out of COVID. I think that's, you know, it's almost impossible to say. I can almost say that, you know, I've never seen an environment in which costs go down at the rate in which they've gone up over the last 3 months. That I think is safe to say. And I think that's why you take on each and every one of these projects as individual projects. And the only thing I would strongly suggest, and having lived on that side of the table, is that if you have the funding available to leverage as many projects as you possibly can as soon as you can, you obviously get the most bang for your buck. The further you quote unquote, I don't want to say this and doesn't want to make this come across as negative, but the further you kick the can down the road in terms of making decisions, you know, we've all heard the phrase that time equals money, and that is absolutely the case when it comes to construction projects. So we are confident that the numbers were very, very dialed in at the beginning of this year, probably a little less so than they are, but we did build in some contingencies as well. But again, I think it's important to recognize that these cost estimates were done based on concept plans. They weren't done based on, you know, schematic design development, construction documents. They were pulled together based on an average cost of a playground, of a splash pad, of a rectangular athletic field, pretty dialed in costs with regards to life cycle replacement of like amenity for like amenity. And so I think it's just always going to be one of those things where, and I think we've provided the breakdown of each and every cost at a unit cost level to you based on what we've had. So the long story short is I think we feel very confident about the numbers based on when those numbers were developed. We did build in a contingency associated with those numbers to account for the quote unquote hot construction market. But yet at the same time, those numbers are only going to be the shelf life of those numbers only are valid for, you know, 6 months to a year. And then you have to start moving, you know, moving forward on it.
Understand. Thank you very much.
Councilmember Green.
Michael, in your considerations, and I appreciate them, did you consider the effects of tourism on these different amenities that we have, for example, the tennis tournaments, the golf tournaments that are coming in, and what is the impact of that, or is that something that's hard to figure in?
No, it is something that could be done. However, we were not scoped to do a quote-unquote economic impact study. Okay. Associated with the variety of elements that might drive economic impact. That certainly could be done, but we were not scoped to do that as part of this project.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. May I offer one thing? I think one of the things that, and I've learned this just with a couple of other projects along the way, is the terminology or the term capital improvement plan within a chapter of the document certainly raises red flags with Vice Mayor Barrett. And I understand kind of where you're coming from. So possibly a reterming of that chapter to say capital cost estimating plan. And all that does is it says, here's your capital projects, here's the cost estimates doing so, without necessarily mixing what we would call formal terminology and language that you use as part of your budget process, and not mixing that in with a planning document. That's just a suggestion that I might offer, that I don't necessarily mean that to ease the concerns, but I think that the term capital improvement plan has a tendency to give you the indication that it gave the vice mayor.
Councilmember Nicholson.
I agree with that. I had the same concern with Melanie, like a vote tonight. I mean, to voters, I know it means that we're not approving $60 million to get right done tonight, but I think voters would kind of see that. I do like Mike's suggestion of saying it's a cost estimation plan or something, like I have some type of wording in there that, you know, when they open up the newspaper, it's not like, oh, our town council just approved $60 million on a whim. Like, I do like the idea of changing it to an estimating plan. I think that is a, optics are a huge thing, whether it's marketing a shopping center or a playground. I think that that's a great suggestion, Mike. And I would like to change it to that as well.
But thank you. I would be reluctant in improving the plan as is. For example, Mr. Barnes spoke tonight about the multi-use path system. And while I appreciate the response by our staff and by the consultant in addressing multi-use paths and trails, it did come later in the process. And there wasn't the community participation. Mike, and you mentioned that with the community center, that there was a need for a lot more community involvement. And you may or may not agree, but I believe that's also true with the multi-use path and trail system, that there really is a need for more community involvement, more community vetting. So, for example, you show in the list of priorities for the multi-use path, a bridge across CDO from Riverfront Park at a price tag of $1 million. And while that might fall into the category of a want, I'm not sure it falls into the category of a need. And I say that because I think part of the justification was an acknowledgement that riders on the Loop Trail are looking for restroom access, as an example. That's an expensive access to a restroom, $1 million, because that trail doesn't really bring residents. It doesn't connect residents to folks coming to Riverfront Park or really coming across Lambert Lane from that subdivision area. There's no residences across CDO Wash because it's adjacent to the Oro Valley Golf Course, which is a private course with very few homes along that part of the path system. You have access points at La Cañada across the bridge and Pushview Lane, and at a much smaller fraction, we could provide an accessible access. That's just one example. So, I appreciate the effort in regards to the work that was done to identify, and I think the vision is wonderful, but I just think there's additional work that needs to be done in community involvement. And that particular, I don't want to pick on that particular segment, but I think that it illustrates that there's just more work to be done. Also with your equity mapping, which I really appreciated, and I think gave us a greater picture of the different types of parks, the location of those parks, the accessibility, that there was clearly a need for a community park north of Tangerine. We haven't really zeroed in on that, what opportunity there is there. There's also a number of, we know fitness and wellness programs are important to our community. And I think I've certainly noted that we have a number of private fitness and wellness providers that have opened even during COVID, I think is something that we need to give more consideration to. So I would favor, and I want to acknowledge that. I don't know that I have a question for you, Mike. I'm just expressing some of my reluctance.
No, Mayor, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to...
No, go ahead.
No, I don't mean to step on your words. I think a master plan is not also meant to be your implementation plan, so to speak. It's meant to be a strategic direction for you to go forward. Christy will attest to this, and I can attest to this having sat in her shoes, is that the master planning process is actually the easier of the two, because now you have to turn around and take the guidelines, the recommendations that have been provided in the plan based on all the information that we've coalesced and recognize that, you know what, you've got to break it down to a project by project basis and start to move forward with implementing it. And again, I long ago remember being in Christie's shoes, and even as a consultant now, all we do is make recommendations. You all make the final decisions. You all are the policy makers. And so this document is meant to be a community value-based strategic direction. And it doesn't mean that this is what your community is absolutely positively going to agree to each and every technical information, but it's meant to try to coalesce and achieve some consensus around the direction that Parks and Recreation is meant to go. So, you know, the implementation side is where the devil in the details is.
Any additional questions? So I'd like to suggest a motion, and that is I move that the council express a vote of appreciation for the work that has been done to identify important community priorities through this study, and that as capital funding is available for park projects, including bond financing this year, council will make final decisions regarding adopting plans that have funding available. Town staff can continue to utilize the study for recommendations to this and future councils.
I'd like to second that.
So it was seconded by Councilmember Nicholson, and I'm happy to repeat it. But discussion?
I think it's a great idea. We need to look at this a little more closely, and when it's time to actually put the money on the table, we really need to look at it very closely.
Any other discussion? Vice Mayor Barrett and then Councilmember Bowen.
I concur with what Councilmember Green said.
Councilmember Bowen and Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Thank you for the motion, Mr. Mayor. I concur as well. I think that this work is an invaluable tool for us over the next 10 years. But we are not committing to any particular spending right now. And I am greatly appreciative of the work of staff and PROS Consulting to bring us to this point. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Councilmember Jones-Ivy.
Yes, I definitely can get behind this, understanding that it's a recommendation, they're guidelines, it's a plan. It's not something that we're going to be locked into. So I must say I'm comfortable with the motion that you made, Mr. Mayor. But it is, as Mike said, it's, you know, this is just a plan. It's not about implementation or anything like that. But I can get on board with your recommendation.
Do you like me to repeat the motion?
I do want you to repeat it. I do.
I move that the council express a vote of appreciation for the work that has been done to identify important community priorities through this study, and that as capital funding is available for park projects, including bond financing this year, council will make final decisions regarding adopting plans that have funding available. Town staff can continue to utilize this study for recommendations to this and future councils.
Okay, so my question is, how is that different than us just approving the plan as is, knowing that it's not something that we're going to take and implement right away?
Well, it's different, Councilmember Jones-Ivy, in that we're not approving the plan specifically, but we're expressing a vote of appreciation and acknowledgement of the value of the plan, and that it will inform us as to budgeting decisions and decisions regarding bonding and investment.
Okay, I understand that. So essentially what we're saying is we're going to approve the concept of the plan.
We're acknowledging the work that has been completed, that it's good information, and that we'll use that information going forward as we make decisions about allocating funds to projects.
and it leaves the process up to us.
I understand that. Okay. You know, I just, okay, that's fine. Because in my mind, even if we approve the plan, it still leaves it up to us or whatever future councils decide. But okay, let's go, Mr. Mayor.
Any more discussion? Mr. Standish, vote, please.
Vice Mayor Barrett?
Yes.
Councilmember Bowen?
Yes.
Councilmember Green?
Yes.
Councilmember Jones Ivy?
Yes.
Councilmember Nicholson?
Yes.
Councilmember Solomon? And Mayor Winfield?
Yes. The motion passes 6-0. Future agenda items? Seeing none, I move to adjourn.
I'll second that.
Seconded by Councilmember Jones Ivy. All in favor say aye. Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Good night, everyone. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you, Michael, for your work.